No, it wouldn't change.
For your information, this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording, subsequently made available via the council's website, charnwood.gov.uk/pages/committee. Please note that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulations of 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the control of the council. So firstly, could I welcome Councillor Dennis Marchant to our meeting? It's your first one, and we're very glad to see you here, Dennis.
Thank you.
Moving on to the agenda. Apologies.
Councillor Betty Crick sends her apologies, she's unwell.
Thank you. The minutes of the previous meetings, they've been circulated. Are we anybody to confirm that they are a true record of what went on that night? Proposer?
Yeah.
Ian proposed. Seconder?
I'll second.
Thank you. Disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Have we any? Do we need it for county council? No. Okay. Questions under committee procedure 12.8. No questions were received. Now we're going to reverse this. We're going to move on to item 6. The review of planning code of good practice. Can I call on Richard to
Chair, could I just very briefly, Chair, if I explain for the benefit of members of the committee, as part of the ongoing review of the constitution, we asked all councillors whether there were any issues within the planning code of good practice or the procedures for plans committee within the council's constitution, whether they wanted to suggest any amendments. The report summarises several suggestions we did receive, and it also gives officer responses from colleagues in planning, and the head of planning and regeneration, and Councillor Slater, the chair of the plans committee, are here. If any councillors want to ask for points of clarification or questions on any of the responses to the submissions that we received, Chair.
Thank you. When I was saying we've reversed 5 and 6, we have, and that's the reason why. Richard, would you like to speak to the motion?
The report has been prepared on my behalf by the head of strategic support, Chair. I've been invited to respond in consultation with Councillor Slater to each of the questions. There are some questions in relation to the planning code of good practice, starting on page 3 of the report, and then going on to the procedures in the council's constitution on page 5. The planning code of good practice questions, the first one concerns, starts on page 3. It's titled A, the role of ward members, and in bold type is the quotation from the planning code and what it says, followed on page 4 by the request by the councillor. It's an italic text at the top of the page there, and what it talks about is the way that paragraph 7.1 relates to the role of all councillors in engaging in planning matters, and the concern is that by treating all councillors the same as plans committee members, it almost paralyses non-plans committee members from engaging in planning matters at committee, if they're speaking on an item or something along those lines. And I think, in fair to the councillor that raised this, I think paragraph 7.1 is unclear, actually, and I think it would benefit from some further clarification, perhaps. Maybe splitting out the role of the plans committee from all councillors who have sort of a general duty not to appear to improperly favour anybody specifically. So I think we could reword that. Essentially, it's section 7 and paragraph 7.1 in particular to make the role of plans committee members distinct from all councillors. And that's what my response says there, Chair.
Yeah. Thank you. That makes eminent sense. Can we do that?
I think it's in your recommendation on the front page.
So, can we put that to the vote? Are we in favour of doing that? Sorry
to interject, Chair. Perhaps there are a range of other points here which I could run through, and then perhaps once I've run through them all, you can either deal with them in turn, or you can deal with them as a whole at the end.
I think I would prefer to deal with it in turn. I think it makes eminent sense. Those in favour of that recommendation?
Are we absolutely all clear with the recommendation?
No, I'd like to see the wording first.
Perhaps clarify, Chair, as the monitoring officer, what you as committee, if you support the officer response to that point, what you would be asking as a committee is for me as the monitoring officer to seek to reword that section 7.1 of the Planning Code of Good Practice to split out the role of plans committee members as distinct from the role of all councillors in relation to that particular point, because there is a subtle difference.
Yeah, that's as I understood it, but obviously.
Well, just for clarity, that's what I wanted.
Thank you.
So I'm happy with that.
All in favour? Any against? Unanimous. Right.
I'm not 100% clear. I need a bit more clarification on the matter.
What? Sorry, through you, Chair.
Yeah, you see, the paragraph 7.1, sorry, I possibly didn't understand actually your point here. How do we distinguish the role of the members of the Plans Committee from the ward councillors? Sorry, I'm not that. No, we did that. What's the difference?
Through you, Chair, I think the issue is that there is no difference, and that a difference should be identified in paragraph 7.1 between the role of all ward councillors and the members of the Plans Committee. At the moment, it reads as though they're all treated in the same way.
Perhaps if I try and explain my understanding of it, Chair, I think what the potential area of confusion is that if you as a ward councillor are attending a plans committee and you are, for example, speaking strongly in objection to a planning application, it could be seen that you are in breach of the current wording of paragraph 7.1 because you wouldn't be acting impartially. But as a ward councillor, you don't have the same degree of expectation of impartiality as a member of the Plans Committee does. So there are different expectations on Plans Committee members and ward councillors who are attending and speaking at Plans Committee meetings.
Yes,
sir. I love you go to this because from the very beginning, when I saw the paragraph 7.1, from the very beginning, actually I had a problem with including the residents of your ward. Because I'm confused, we are actually elected through a democratic process to represent the residents of our ward, and of course there should be a degree of bias, I don't want to use the word bias in the wrong way, towards actually the people actually we represent. So if we expect actually every councillor to act as a member of the Plans Committee, totally impartial, not having a degree of bias towards the people he or she represents, I don't understand how it works.
Well, we a planning committee, that's exactly what we say. You know, we are aware of these facts, but we come with an open mind.
And unless you aren't of an open mind, in which case you should declare it.
And if you're not,
you have to be open to persuasion. If you can't be open to persuasion, you shouldn't be taking part in the debate.
I'm terribly sorry, but I need to understand. Yeah. So if actually I don't have a particular interest about a specific development in Rothley, and I have, you know, all the residents in Rothley having a problem with this, and I feel they need to represent them, and I go to the plans committee and say, I represent the people in Rothley, we don't agree with this developer, I don't have a particular interest in the development, but I am biased because I express the opinion of the people in Rothley.
Yes, so you're not with an open mind.
So I'm not with an open mind, so I'm in breach of duty.
Yeah. So you declare that you're not with an open mind.
Okay.
In other words, there's no problem through you, Chair. There's no problem not being of an open mind, but you shouldn't take part as a substitute on planning and then stay in and vote. If you've already closed your mind, you could represent your residents, but you can't take part in the vote.
Okay. Yes, David.
Chairman, it may be that Leon's hit on the reason for the changing of these words. And I think Leon, excuse me, discussing it, is looking at the wording that exists and saying he doesn't understand how it can happen. Well, that's why you requested it to be changed.
Yeah.
So I think the fact is that, yes, Leon is right, that it is difficult to differentiate between the member and the committee member in 7.1 as it works, and taking what Leon has said is as the pitfall that most members fall into, Richard is suggesting that that ought to be changed, and I think that's what Leon, I think that's what you want. You want it changed.
Yes, please.
And I think that's what you put forward and asked for Richard and my views on, and which you've now asked Adrian to go away and change it. I think that's as I understand it.
Joan, you had something you wanted to say.
Well, when you're on plans committee and you are interested in a development, you actually leave the table if you're going to speak on it, don't you? So therefore you are not part of the plans committee any longer once you leave that table. But there are people that are sit round that table that do say they come with an open mind, but they have actually been active in objecting to a plans committee, to a planning application in their area, but they're not going to speak on it. Now, I know that for a fact, where one councillor said she had an open mind, but she had been actually working very actively on the objections of a planning application. So is this what this is all about, to stop that happening?
I thought so, that this helps to clarify that. By going along the route that we've more or less decided, that would clarify that. Sandy, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, I'm losing my voice. As things stand at the moment, though, the rules are quite clear. And if you are a member of the Plans Committee, but there is an issue in your ward, and as ward councillor you've been asked to intervene, the rules are quite clear on what you can and can't do. Is laid out very clearly for you, and it is a matter of simply following the rules. And if there are councillors on the plans committee who are not following the rules, then there are sanctions that could and should be brought against them, because we have to remember always that the plans committee sit in a very different way to almost every other committee on the council. We sit in a quasi-judicial position. It's like licensing, or the similar one. We don't sit in the same kind of legal framework. And we have to be very careful on plans, because we do sit within that legal framework, and we need to be bearing that in mind.
And do you think that this proposal will help in that?
I'm not sure that it would, to be honest, I think. But I do agree that the instructions for councillors who find themselves in this position should be made, perhaps be made much clearer.
Could I clarify, Chair? My understanding of paragraph 7.1 as it currently stands is it applies to all councillors when they're acting in their role as a ward member, i.e. that's the top bit. Mm. And what it effectively says is, if you read it in the black and white as it's written, as a ward councillor, if you attend the Plans Committee meeting and exercise your speaking rights as a ward councillor, and strongly come out in either in favour or in objection to a planning application in your ward, you could be taken as having breached paragraph 7.1, which says you have to be impartial and treat everybody fairly. Now, I think the point that was being raised by the person who made this submission is that feels incorrect, because it would effectively mean, as a ward councillor, when you went along and exercised your speaking rights, you would have to be completely impartial and you would have to neither support nor object to a planning application.
Yes.
Which is not the role of a ward, not usually the role of a ward councillor speaking at a plans committee. What the suggestion is that we take away this paragraph 7.1 and split it out to make it clear that it applies only to councillors who are sitting on the plans committee, rather than to all councillors.
Well, if that makes sense.
So when you are a ward councillor sitting on the plans committee and you happen to be considering an application in your ward, you are required to be impartial and have an open mind. And if you don't, as I think a couple of members of the committee have said, you should step away during that item because you're not open-minded. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes, it does.
Yes? Is everybody happy with that?
Yes.
Right. So can we put that to the vote then? That we go with this amendment for this part of the discussion. Yes? All in favour? Any against? That's carried.
So for the purpose of the recording, I can record that everybody is in favour.
That's right. Thank you.
Unanimous.
Do you want to deal with the next one, Richard? Or do you want
the next one?
Through you, Chair, I'll do my best. Item B, halfway down page 4, Chair, talks about the way all councillors are contracted by applicants, developers, or objectors. And it talks about councillors referring those people who contact them to for planning, procedure and technical advice to officers, and also to report in writing that they've had contact with the applicant, objectors or other parties to myself, and request that that's recorded on the planning file. The request that came in by the councillor is that it's advisable for all councillors, whether they're on the plans committee or not to enter into a conversation with an applicant or to have meetings without having an officer present. And they're referring to the strong advice in paragraph 8.2 of the Constitution, which strongly discourages those types of meetings with the Plans Committee members. I think my response to this discussion with Councillor Slater is that the whole point of the planning process is that councillors should be able to actively engage with applicants and objectors and agents, and that's an important part of their board work. I think paragraph 8.1 merely reminds them that if they're being asked for planning advice or technical procedural advice, that they need to refer the requestor to an officer who can provide the professional response to that. But also, just for transparency, where they are in contact with the applicants or objectors, that they do make me aware of that so it can be recorded. And I think my advice to this committee is that the arrangements that we have in place at the moment are appropriate and that no change needs to be made.
Anybody got any other view? Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just a look, because it's a very fine line between you just having a general discussion with an applicant to it turning on its head and you being lobbied and, you know, stuff like that. So I think it's a very delicate situation, and I tend to myself be very wary of going into a meeting with an applicant or objector, because I think they might be inviting me for a nice friendly chat, but then it could turn and then you're in a situation where you shouldn't really be in that situation, and to try and get out of that meeting is quite difficult. So I would appreciate just a little bit more meat on the bones to this as to what you should be able to discuss and what you shouldn't be discussing. I know it says technical, but what's classed as technical? And I just find myself sometimes in a bit of a sticky wicket, and a bit more clarity would be helpful.
Joan?
I've got a very similar situation in the fact that I live in an area where there's a large development in the plans at the moment, in planning at the moment.
Really? Just one?
In my area, yeah. I've been asked to speak on behalf of the objectors, not as a councillor, but to speak on behalf of the objectors. Now, I've had long discussions with them and to hear their concerns. I have not had any dealings with the developer themselves. If you can't have a talk with people in your area, your neighbours or near residents, you're not going to be able to do your job, are you, as a ward councillor or anything else? I mean, I'm not going as a ward councillor, I will be going as me. But they've asked me to go because I am a councillor. And they say I know what I'm talking about, but I don't know, you know. But that it's a very, very difficult situation.
Leon, you
wanted
to say?
Actually, I just want to echo exactly what you said, because I think we said the same thing. Our job, the way we perceive our job, in quotation marks, as councillors, is to listen to people. These are one of the basic duties we have. That's why we are there, to listen to people. Now, I'm not a member of the Plans Committee, and I fully agree, if you're a member of the Plans Committee, you have a different role, different responsibilities. But as just a ward councillor, a petty ward councillor, I'm there actually to listen to people. I personally encourage everybody who has an objection to an application to put in writing. You know, send me the email and I will just form a structured response to you. But if somebody actually just turns to my house and everybody knows where I live and rings the bell and says, "Ah, can I tell you about actually this development down there, the traffic may be terrible," etc. I say, "I'm listening actually with great interest, and yeah, you know, if you put it in writing, I will just do something about that. I don't see I violate any rules in this one. I'm there to listen to people." And sometimes I listen to people without an officer present. Now, if it's a serious issue, if I perceive that an issue is very serious, of course, I will take the case actually to the council with an officer present. I'm not going to discourage actually members of my ward to come to see me and talk to me.
Sandy, you're
on the book,
Ian?
No.
Ian?
Oh, I can see how
I could.
Similar hands
closed.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, we've had the situation where, I've said specifically, don't go round see David because he should have an officer present. So what does he do? He goes straight round see David. And you say, "Well, I'm not speaking to you. There should be an officer present." But there's nothing wrong, I don't think, with, I mean, if somebody approaches you, you can speak openly about it. You just don't express an opinion. And you don't imply that you're giving an opinion. Yeah. You can perhaps say that, you know, in your experience and where you perhaps would have voted for or against something, giving an example. and that person then can probably consider whether it's not it's worth their while to continue trying to lobby you, if you like. But at the end of the day, you've got to go into every planning meeting with an open mind, and if you can't, then you just shouldn't be there, and that's the bottom line. But of course, as ward councillors, the public wants to talk to us about planning applications, and I think we must. But if they want to get into detail, there's an invisible line, and once we've gone past that line, you say, well, now it'd be best if we had an officer present. I think in all my time, I think that's only ever happened once. But I think as long as you just don't commit, once you've said, I would vote this way or that way, then you've committed yourself.
Yes.
You can no longer say you're going with an open mind.
It should be under the judgment of the councillor, and I really trust the judgment of councillors. Yeah. Richard,
if it helps through you, Chair, point 8.1 of the code is about the wider councillor's role, yeah. not the role of plans committee members. Right. And what it's saying is that if any of your constituents comes to you and talks about planning application, that's absolutely fine, actually. The problem comes if they say to you,
would you vote for it?
Will you support it?
Not necessarily that, but if they say to you, can you explain to me what the procedure is for how this application would be dealt with by appeal, or, you know, a technical matter which is really an area which should be left to the officer to help the constituent with. So they should be referred to officers to provide them with that kind of detailed advice. Or, for example, they ask for interpretation of the development management procedure order, or they ask for a comment about the 45 degree rule, lighting or something like that. It's quite okay for ward councillors to comment on, with the constituent about how a proposal might be considered to be over dominant on their property. That's okay. You can have that kind of discussion. But you need to avoid providing them advice and interpretation of the 45 degree rule, or a supplementary planning document, or giving them advice about highway matters, because it's a technical professional area that should be left to the officers to consider.
Yeah,
that's the nuance, I think.
Okay.
Anybody else got any comments? So, as I see it, we are saying basically there is no need to amend the code of conduct. Are we in favour of that?
Yes, in favour of that.
Luke, could you please indicate? Those against? That's carried.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was unanimous.
For purposes of recording, that was unanimous.
Yeah.
This one as well.
Yeah. Well, no. We're moving on now to 1.3. See 1.3 on page 5. Councillors are encouraged to. It starts, councillors. I believe you want to speak on
no,
this.
No, 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 no. No, this is another one. Oh. I'm on this one, Diana.
Okay. So. Your response to that, Richard?
Thank you, Chair. So, as you say, this is the top of page 5. It's C, point 1.3, yes. And that relates to paragraph 1.3 of the Members Planning Code of Practice. It's part of the introduction to the code, actually. What it does is advises that councillors are encouraged to speak to officers about planning matters. And to suggest how proposals could be improved, and explains that the code and the protocol on presentations to councillors provides a framework in which that kind of positive engagement with the planning process can take place. So the request by the councillor is that they feel it could be worded a bit more strongly, because they rarely get feedback from officers once a planning application has been called in through the call-in process. This councillor sometimes feels that officers believe that they are criticising them rather than the application. I think my interpretation of the of point 1.3 and the request by the councillor is that there's a misunderstanding about what paragraph 1.3 is seeking to achieve. There are other documents that are relevant to the council's issue about how councillors and officers work together. Obviously the call-in process itself has its own protocol and guidance, and we also have a protocol on how councillors can engage in pre-application discussions. So that sits out with the member planning code of practice. So perhaps this councillor, the request can be focused in another forum on those protocols rather than on this code of good practice that's before us tonight.
Thank you, Richard. You've heard what's been said. Anybody got a comment? Yes, Deborah.
Just a quick on the actual wording of that, because my understanding is when I've had applications and I've made suggestions about how I felt it could have been improved, I've been told that you can only comment on what's placed in front of you. So could you just clarify if what I was told was correct or whether this is correct?
Really? Through you, Chair. So the local planning authority has to consider the application put before it rather than the one it would have liked to have received.
Yeah.
Whilst participants in the process or councillors, members of the public who comment on an application might identify an issue with the planning application, there may be an opportunity to discuss that issue with the applicant, and they may decide to amend the application to take that issue on board to try and overcome it or mitigate it, but they don't have to, and if they don't, they run the risk of the application being refused, or you know, there might be it might be approved conditionally, subject to conditions. So it just depends. But we have to, as a planning authority, consider the application before us. That is right.
Still doesn't. I'm still struggling to share with where it says how development proposals could be improved. So what can we do?
Well, that's through you, Chair. So that's right. So if you're submitting your comments and you say, this application is going to, say for the sake of argument, it's going to impact on the neighbour by virtue of being over dominant and taking light. That comment is in the public domain. The applicant can see that, and the officer working with the applicant may be able to suggest an amendment to that proposal to improve it, so that the extension is set back from the front of the main dominant part of the building to reduce its overbearing nature on perhaps a habitable room and window that's in the adjacent property. So, but the applicant doesn't have to take on board that issue, and if they don't, then the issue that you've raised may be substantive enough to lead to the officer recommending that the application be refused, or it might lead to an adjustment which is just opaque. Some other adjustment. So it just depends on how far the applicant's prepared to go.
But my request and my 3D chair wasn't taken any further. I was just told, no, you can only comment on what's in front of you. So probably I was misadvised a little bit, or
potentially
by the officer. So I just wanted to clarify how that works. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody got any other comments? So what we're saying here is that we don't think that it needs any further amendment. How it reads is how it reads, and it should be, it should stay as that. All in favour of that?
Perhaps through the recording, all in favour.
Thank you. Right, Richard, you're on again.
Can I just say something about this? 12.12. I put this question forward and it's completely wrong. I don't know how it's happened, but I was asked at a parish clerk's meeting to put it in writing when I was speaking about it. I wasn't speaking publicly, I was speaking to Nikki, and I asked, Karen. If I should put it in writing. I put it in writing and it's not come out as it should have done. All I was asking was, after last year's amendment, that the chairman only could ask questions. I would just like the amendment to be that the deputy chairman of Trans could also ask questions, and that is all I was asking. Not that the members were able to ask questions, because, as it said, the meeting would drag on and on and on. It would never end. So I was just, all I wanted was that the deputy chairman could ask questions. It's probably the way I've put it, I don't know, but that's all I'm asking.
Richard?
Well, might I first?
Yes, you
conjecture on this point. It just seems to me that the chairman may or may not ask for points of clarification. But don't forget, the vice chairman is sitting at the chairman's right hand and has the power of pushing a note under his nose or her nose. And the whole idea is to try and get clarity, to try and get good planning decisions. And speaking for me personally, if the vice chair were to push a note under my nose, I would take that up as a question that needed clarifying.
Okay. Richard?
Chair, I would have said the same as the centre.
Well, Bill and Ben, then, all right.
Through you, Chair, we do have the Vice Chair with us this evening. I wondered whether Councillor Forrest might have a view. Sorry, putting on the spot.
Might have a voice to be able to express her.
Yes.
All I can say, I do take Councillor Tassel's point, but I'd be reluctant to advocate anything that make council meetings go on any longer, particularly as we're likely to be very late on Thursday night of this week.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's absolutely essential that chair of the plans committee can ask questions of the officers. I think quite often somebody says something and then we're almost expecting the officer to come back to clarify the point where they haven't. If the chair does this, I think it's absolutely essential.
I don't think that's the issue, is it?
No, the issue is to ask the speakers that are speaking on behalf of the public,
yes,
or the residents, to clarify what they have
sorry,
said.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
sometimes they say something and you pick it up, but you don't actually ask them to clarify what they mean, and therefore
if I may come back on that then, Chair, we have a similar system at County Hall where if there's something that's unclear, the Chair can ask that speaker for clarification. Now, I think that would be very worthwhile, personally.
Any other views? So, would you like to outline what we're saying here now, Adrian?
I think we're saying leave it as it is, because David has said that, I mean, a note can just be a note and not really say what you want to say. That's the problem. I mean, I'm not being funny, but you stick a piece of paper and say, ask so-and-so. You could probably ask something totally different and your question's
yes,
never been asked. That's my concern. But if that's the case, then that's fine.
So, the proposal is that we leave things as they are. All in favour? Those against?
So, for purposes of recording, 5 in favour, 2 against.
Right. And the next one from you, Richard.
Thank you, Chair. So this is point B.
Yeah,
the committee procedures are top of page 6. The extract from the procedures is there in bold type. The request from the councillor is the final say on whether a call into committee by ward councillor is upheld and discussed by committee is made by an officer and not an elected official. Seems to be democratic, it should be made by an elected representative. Perhaps that would naturally fit with the chair of plans committee or respective cabinet lead member. So the point to be made here is that this was discussed at full council in June 2016, following really quite extensive debate at planning training, and also in consultation for members for 3 weeks over the Christmas period of 15-16. At that time, it was decided not to change the rules. The worry is here, giving the need for a referral to an elected official would mean that Councillor Slater, having to cope with a volume of call-in requests, which would result, you know, be a massive volume of call-in requests, and it is really a matter of planning judgment, really. The guidance that we have on what is or is not a planning issue is pretty clear. So the advice is that we leave it as it is, Chair.
Thank you. Anybody got any comments on that? Yes.
I think it was made clear at the training that
it
wouldn't be, oh, no, it's not going to Plans Committee, end of story. I think you did make it very clear that it would be a discussion between the Board Councillor and whoever was making it. It was made extremely clear that it's not just for the right thing, that's it. So I think it's fine as it is, and I think there are routes for Ward Councillors to go if they don't agree with that decision, that they can flag it up that there's an issue. So I don't see any need to change.
So are we all in favour of not changing?
Yeah, agreed.
Please indicate.
Absolutely, recording unanimous.
Thank you.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, surely.
Of course, I agree with this particular issue. I have an issue with the 21 calendar days in general, and I don't know how can I bring it up at some stage.
What?
The 21 days for objection.
Right.
What? You see, in most cases, the vast majority of the cases, this is all right. But there is a particular case I came across very recently in Thurcaston, where actually the application came to me in September. I responded straight away within a week. I said I have no objection because nobody came to me to complain about this. And then I attended the Parish Council in Thurcaston 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, where I had approximately 10 residents, and the entire Parish Council have a problem with this particular actually application, which actually came to us back in September. So I have an issue here. That means, how come actually the Parish Council discovered this application almost 2.5 months down the line? This went beyond the 21 days. And what powers do we have to go backwards and really examine this application where there are issues about this? I have this question, I don't really have an answer to this. Should we have actually a clause of an exception to certain applications which may be a bit late in terms of objection?
I don't know if this is the forum for that question, but Richard, would you like to answer it?
Just briefly, Chair. in the old days, we used to have a ward referral process whereby ward councillors would be engaged at the end of the process once we've been through all the consultations, and they'd get a report which set out what all the issues were with the application and who'd objected, numbers of people that objected, and putting forward a recommendation. And at that stage, ward councillors had a week to decide whether or not they wanted it to be referred to the Plans Committee or not. We were pretty out of step with the rest of the country in maintaining that ward referral process. And it generated a huge industry in writing up quite detailed reports, which often would be dealt with under delegated authority. So we changed the process in consultation with members 18 months ago, 2 years ago, something like that, to front load the engagement with councillors. And the intention would be that councillors would be engaged within the first 21 day period, and ward councillors would be using their leadership role within the local community to come to a view as to whether they felt the application raised planning issues, so that they could put a marker down in that first 21 days as to whether it should be called in or not. Once you put a marker down, it remains, that call-in remains live right up until the end of the process. If you don't withdraw it in writing, it will go to Plans Committee. So what's supposed to happen is Once a call and request has been made, the ward councillor then engages with the planning officer through the remaining part of the process to see if your concerns have been overcome or not. And if they have, you may exercise the withdrawal. And if your concerns remain, then it goes to the next plans committee. That's how the system is geared up. So it does require the ward councillor to identify at the outset what the planning issues are. So I think what you're referring to, councillor, is having come to the view in the first instance that you haven't identified any planning issues, somewhere down the line there has been a bubble of opposition which has appeared, which you've perhaps wanted to align yourself to and exercise according, but the way the constitution is set up, it's too late. You should have put the marker down at the start of the process. So there isn't a way of going back in time once you've missed the opportunity to exercise the calling. In the constitution, it's too late. You have to do it within 21 days. So perhaps we can have a separate conversation outside about how we can help you to manage your case loads when it comes through to you and your residents, and find a way to make it work for you. That's a separate conversation.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you. Now, next is...
Chair, as a committee, are you happy to leave that one as is, as a suggestion?
I thought we voted on that, didn't we?
Oh, you had, yeah, sorry. Yeah. It's reopened, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
So, review of the Constitution.
Oh, with your permission, I'd like to leave, Chairman.
You've got my permission.
May I leave as well, Chair?
No.
thank you for inviting me.
And thank you for coming. So we now go back to item 5, the review of the Constitution. Adrian.
Thank you, Jack. So this is really a continuation of the item we've just dealt with, but this is focusing in on member conduct issues. So for completeness and information, we've attached the members' code of the current members' code of conduct and the procedure for dealing with councillor complaints, various other protocols and codes of conduct in the appendix. Councillors were given the opportunity in a similar way to put forward any comments or suggestions to feed into the review of the Constitution, and we did have one point that was raised in the middle of page 3 of the report, where a councillor suggested that possibly we could include an extra section in the code of conduct providing guidance around the use of social media. The officer responses at the bottom of page 3, and to summarise, just a reminder for information for members of the committee, the code of conduct is now a shared code of conduct with the county council, with some of the other districts in Leicestershire, and with some of our parish and town councils. So if we start unilaterally amending the code of conduct, we're going to become out of kilter with those other codes of conduct, and it will cease to be a joint shared code of conduct. So I would be very hesitant to include anything extra within the code of conduct, but what I am more than willing to do is to have a look at the guidance on the use of social media that we issued to councillors probably 18 months, 2 years ago, and update that and make sure it's circulated to all councillors again, if that would be useful. And equally, if members of the committee feel it would be useful, we could look at providing some more update training on social media as part of the member training programme as well, as an option.
So what you're suggesting is a guidance?
I think the key word, Chair, is that the code of conduct and the constitution are rules.
Yeah.
What this councillor is suggesting is providing guidance around the use of social media. I would be loath to include guidance within the code or the constitution, but I'm quite happy to provide that guidance separately to councillors, but in a more informal way, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense to me. Anybody got any views? Yes.
Can I just ask why this committee is looking at this if it's extremely difficult for us to alter it? I mean, I'm just trying to clarify what the point of us of actually looking at this, if now what you're saying is... Well, you can't really amend it at all.
We did, for example, amend it to include a requirement for postcodes in relation to property addresses, and I did then go to the monitoring officers of the other councils who use the code of conduct, and they all agreed to change their code as well. But what I would be wary of doing is us unilaterally changing our code of conduct, and for councillors who are then dual-hatted or potentially triple-hatted, the situation we used to be in was if you were a county councillor and a borough councillor, you had to remember which code of conduct you're operating under. And for some of you, for example, if you attend a parish council meeting as a borough councillor and the county councillor, you'd have two different codes of conduct applying to you at the same meeting, which is, can be quite confusing. So it's not that we can't alter the code of conduct, it just means we would have to get the agreement of all of the other councils that operate it as well, if that makes sense, Jane.
I'm not disputing what you've just said, I totally agree with you, but I think it would have been helpful for us as councillors and members of this committee to be informed that to make a change, it must be a serious sort of change, rather than, you know, as just reading. We were asked for suggestions to how to amend this, and it, you know, you're reading through it and think, well, that could be better, that could be better, but...
Chair, we can take that on board next year and make it clear that it's common code of conduct, and any amendments to the code of conduct itself would require acceptance by all of the other councils.
So it needs to be something fairly major for us to sort of put it forward as a change, really, rather than... So I think it would have been easier if we'd been clear to us.
Thanks, so we can do that later, don't
we? We can do that next year, certainly, so we can make that clearer.
Yes, sir. You
mentioned actually the code of conduct as regards the social media. Can you give us actually the major highlights there?
I don't think the code of conduct as it stands at the moment specifically talks about the use of social media, but what it does talk about is general things like treating with people with respect and not bullying people. And obviously you could potentially, and I have as monitoring officer had complaints about things that councillors have said on social media that people have felt demonstrates a lack of respect or is tantamount to bullying. So the code of conduct is generic, and social media, written leaflets, ward newsletters and all of that just fall within it as a whole, rather than it talking specifically about social media.
So the use, I'm sorry,
yes, sir,
just to understand. So as far as we comply with the general principles and values of this document, the use of social media is acceptable.
Yes, I
generally. Even if you put actually in Facebook that you are a councillor.
It's quite a complex area in that the code of conduct applies when you are acting in your capacity as a councillor. Mm-hmm. And obviously, some councillors use social media in their capacity as a councillor. They make it clear they're acting as a councillor. Other councillors have private social media accounts. And some people will say within their little introduction, these are my personal views. They have nothing to do with me being a councillor. Where the grey area comes into effect is when is a councillor not acting as a councillor? Mm-hmm. So if on your personal Twitter account you are having a two-way exchange of information with somebody about Charnwood Borough Council matters, even if you've made it clear you're acting as a private individual, well, actually, if you're talking about council business and you're a councillor, it then becomes quite difficult for a councillor to say, well, actually, I've made it clear I wasn't acting as a councillor, but you've been talking about council business and expressing views about what the council's doing. So although you may have said you're not acting as a councillor, your course of conduct may actually suggest you are acting as a councillor, and it's quite difficult sometimes.
It's not clear
always. It can be a bit of a grey area. And I had a complaint made a few months ago about a councillor who entered into an exchange on a local issue on a Facebook discussion page, and the councillor hadn't actually referred to themselves as being a councillor, but somebody else did. They said, you might wish to know, the person that just said that is a borough councillor. And what does that say about them as a councillor? And that person then carried on in an exchange. And then the person they were having an exchange with, having been told they were a councillor, complained about them. Now, that person could have said, well, it was a private view, private exchange, but somebody else within the conversation had made it clear they were a councillor. So you could then take the view, anything they said after that point, because they hadn't said, I might be a councillor, but these are my own personal views, they've just gone on with the exchange. You could take the view that after within that conversation it was pointed out that they were a councillor, that anybody else participating in that thread would have known they were a councillor. It's very, very grey and complicated, which is why I think the suggestion that guidance is important. I strongly agree that guidance is important, and social media obviously a rapidly developing area, and I'm quite happy to review that I have issued guidance in the past about use of social media by councillors. I'm quite happy to review that guidance, update it and issue it again. But it is guidance, it's not a rule book.
Yeah. Can I come in here? Just a minute.
Don't cut it if you wish.
I've been up against this because there's one person in Shepshed, I'm like a mention my name and it's like a red rag to a bull. And I don't know why, because I've never met the chap. But if I was to put something on under the name of Joan Tassel, I would be splattered all over Facebook because he doesn't like me. As I say, I've never met the chap. But everything I say, he turns round to mean something else. So I've just completely stopped using Facebook. I read it and I think, oh, I'd really love to reply to that.
Yeah.
But I don't, because it just isn't worth it. Because it's so embarrassing when you get somebody like that, you know, that really... I've never met this chap, I don't know where he lives.
A time to speak and a time to remain silent.
Yes, there is, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, of course, we all need to consider retweeting. Somebody much higher up the food chain than any of us has got himself into shtuck recently for us.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
I don't retweet, because I don't do Twitter. But I think it's probably safe to say that if you're a councillor, you're talking about council matters, you're always wearing council hat.
Yeah.
You can't take it on and off.
No.
Well, if you're a councillor, you're a councillor. So just bear that in mind.
Anybody else got any comments? Yes.
I'd just like to say, Chair, that I appreciate what's been said, and it is an issue certainly within our parish council at the moment. And I think that it's the same, obviously, over all the councils. So the guidance would be welcome. And if it could cascade down through to the parish councils, that would be really good too. Because, as far as I'm aware, I don't see the NELC code of practice or any of the others actually covering this at the moment. And I would say that, from what I've heard, that we have the same problems.
Okay.
We'd welcome that guidance.
Anybody else? Any comments?
Can I just check? Yes. Was that guidance sent out to parish? I'm sure we...
I think it might have been.
I think there is a bit of an issue getting information from here through the clerks, filtering down. Yeah, that process doesn't always seem to match up, but it was definitely, because I think that was one of the points we did raise, that, you know, parish councils are in the same position as we are, and they need the guidance. So...
Well, we can always include it this time round if you agree that you want to send the guidance out again. Mm-hmm. So we will make sure that parish clerks get it as well to be able to cascade that.
Yes.
That would be really useful. Thank you.
So, are we agreed that we want this guidance to be cascaded down as a matter of urgency so that everybody can be aware of where we are?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All in favour?
Yes.
Is that unanimous?
For purposes of the recording, that's unanimous.
Right. So, moving on to item 7, the update on complaints received. Again, Adrian, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. This is the regular item for the committee's information on complaints we receive about borough and parish councillors. So since the last meeting, there was one complaint that was at the fact-finding stage at the last meeting. Yeah. That has now been resolved. And that's on page 4, that's the third item down. For information, there was an, at the fact-finding stage, I decided in consultation with one of the independent persons that there was no evidence that there had been any breach of the code of conduct. The complainant submitted an appeal, and following the approved process, the appeal submission and the response from the council had been complained about, the original complaint, and my fact-finding summary was sent to the chair and vice chair, who having considered the appeal, decided not to take any further action, so the appeal fell away at that stage. And there has been a fourth new complaint, which is the last one at the bottom of page four. All of the complaints so far this year have been about borough councillors. The most recent complaint at the fact-finding stage, I determined that even if the conduct being complained about was substantiated, that it would not amount to a breach of the code of conduct. And one of our independent persons agreed with that view, and the appeal period for that complaint has now passed. So that complaint is closed as well.
Chair? Yeah. I'd just like to say this for, I mean, I don't have anything to hide here, but one of those complaints was about me by the parish council.
Thank you, Ed. Any further comments? So, thank you for that, Ed. The work programme, item 8.
This is really just for the committee's information, Chair, and we're not recommending any amendments, additions or deletions to the work programme, so it's just to let you know really what's coming up at the next meeting in March 2018. So before then, we will be issuing the six-month reminder to borough, parish and town councillors, asking them to update their register of interest if there are any amendments required, and we will give you an update on where we've got to with that at the next meeting. And also we will bring you an item on the new general data protection regulations and whether there are any implications arising from those in relation to the code of conduct or guidance or training for members as well that may be required. Oh, I've just been reminded by Nikki, we do have some training arranged for the 21st of February 2018 on the GDPR regulations.
What is the GDPR?
Sorry?
GDPR.
General Data Protection Regulations. And because all councillors, you are all individually data processors in your own right, I would encourage you to attend that training if you possibly can, because the new regulations are quite strict.
Let me just say that as such, as we all are all data recorders, are we included in this by the borough as such?
We register all borough councillors
under
the Data Protection Act individually. Yes.
So there's nothing else that we as individuals have to do?
You have to understand what the requirements and what the laws are that you have to comply with.
Yeah, but there's no further registration.
You don't have to register. We register all of you individually, collectively.
So it will be
individually, collectively. You're all registered individually by the council as data protection processors.
Okay. So we will be circulating all members on this.
It's part of the routine member training development events that you have on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
So the invite for that particular training has gone out to all councillors.
Thank you.
But if you could encourage your fellow councillors to attend if possible.
21st of February.
Yeah.
24th.
First.
Oh, 21st.
21st. 21st of February.
It should be in your diary, I think.
Let's have a look. It is. Who's been super efficient then?
Right.
Alert 15 minutes before then.
So by the March meeting, Jane, you'll all be experts if you've attended the training.
Don't forget, next is a has-been, a spurt is a drip under pressure. So, that's all, unless anybody else has got any issues they wish to raise.
No.
Sandy, we've concluded in time for you.
You've done very well. I'll be able to get to my next meeting.
Thank you, everybody, for
not flagging them.